today we still will discuss about how to deepen your concentration. And there's one important point I need to share is when you practice mindfulness of breathing, people ask, should I focus on the sensation or not? No, not the sensation. What do you mean sensation? Cold, hot, sensation? Is it this cold and hot? Cold and hot is fire element, right? So if you pay attention to the cold and hot, you are practicing fire element. You are not practicing mindfulness of breathing. Therefore, sensation is not your focus. Then what is your focus? The concept. Concept. Cold and hot is ultimate truth, not the concept. But the concept of in and out breath. You just know in breath, out breath, in breath, out breath. Forget about the sensation. Sensation is not your focus. Yesterday, a yogi reported. He said he has been practicing for a long time Anapanasati, and that's lightness, bright lightness. But yesterday talk, I mentioned you focus, you should pay attention to the concept of in-breath and out-breath. Suddenly struck his mind. He said all the time he had been focusing on the touching, on the sensation of the touching point. But yesterday, after listening to my instruction, he tried not to focus on the sensation and just pay attention to the concept of in-breath and out-breath, and his light become brighter. So only one fine tune, you improve. Therefore, don't focus on sensation. Sensation is not your focus point, but the concept of in-breath and out-breath. Okay? And Buddha said, this concentration is not for low person. Concentration practice is very noble and spiritual. So it must be practiced with respectful. Practice your concentration with respectful, with respect. Buddha mentioned in Anguttara Nikaya, it's not for low person, it's very noble and very spiritual. So practice it correctly, respectfully. Okay, then what is the purpose of concentration practice? Why should we practice concentration? There are four benefits. Number one, for pleasant abiding here and now. For pleasant abiding here and now. Why? When a person enters into first jhana, what's first jhana? Buddha said, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome mental states. A yogi enters into first jhana with rupture and pleasure born of seclusion, accompanied by application of mind and sustained application of the mind. This is called first jhana. So first jhana must be secluded from sensual pleasures. If your mind still inclined to sensual pleasures, you cannot attain first jhana. And Buddha said, without abandoning six qualities or six things, a person cannot attain first jhana. What are the six things? First, sensual thoughts, sensual desire. This sensual desire come from the impingement from the six external objects of agreeable sound, agreeable form, overwhelming your eyes and your mind. Agreeable sound or sensually enticing sound. Then pleasant, agreeable smell, taste, tangible object and mental object, all a fantasy. So these are the six sense objects that can trigger your lust. Without abandon this sensual lust desire, one cannot attain first jhana. This mentioned in Anguttara Nikaya, the book of six. Okay, this is the first thing. So now in this retreat, we have very less sensual desire. The only one is the food. The second one is the eye. The eye want to see here and there. There's one monk during ancient time. There was a monk, Mahathera. He stayed in a cave for 60 years. And in that great cave, they were painting, seven Buddhas painting on the wall. So one day, many monks came to visit this cave and they saw the painting, the seven Buddhas painting on the wall, on the top. So they were happy and talked about this. Oh, they are such serene Buddhas painting. And the monk who stayed in the cave for 60 days told them, only today I got to know there are seven Buddhas painting on the wall through your eyes. Through your eyes, not my eyes. What does it mean? It means that he stayed there for 60 years without looking up. He's just guarding his sense door. Keep his meditation object. We call clear comprehension of domain. All the time he keep his meditation object with him, he never look right, look left, look up, but only cast down his eye. Therefore, for 60 years, he never know there's painting, seven Buddhas painting on the wall. But today, through another monk who never got his sense door, through his eyes, he got to know they are painting on the wall. And I would like to tell you my story also. When I first practiced meditation, first retreat, 40 days. 40 days, and my teacher instructed, not look back, not look up, not look side, only cast down your eyes. I'm a very obedient student, not like you. So I'm very obedient, okay? So I cast down my eyes for 40 days. Is there no talking? No talking for 40 days. Then there's one yogi, we stay in Dokdom. So beside me, there was a yogi, female yogi, sleep with me for 40 days. I don't know how she looks like. I don't know how she looks like. Because I also like the monk, never see, only cast down my eyes. So now you only have 9 days. Can you just cast down your without look up. So this is called guarding the sense door. Control your ear, control your eye, control your nose, tongue, body, and the mind, keep your mind with the meditation subject on it. This is called guarding the sense faculties. So if you can guard the sense faculty, you shut all the sensual desire. Because sensual desire only can arise when there is impingement from the sense object, external sense object, to the internal sense basis. When there's no impingement, usually you don't have sensual desire. So guarding one's sense door means guarding your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and mind with your meditation subject is the best way to prevent unarisen sensual desire to arise from arising. Okay, so without abandoning this one, attainment of first jhana is impossible, said by the Buddha. Okay, second one. The first jhana means secluded from sensual desire and secluded from unwholesome mental state. What are the five unwholesome mental state? First is sensual desire itself. Second is ill will, anger. Especially in the retreat, ill will towards the fellow practitioner. You have to discard this one. Some people may create a lot of noise that you get very angry. When you get very angry, your mind cannot concentrate well. So you have to be very patient with metta to all practitioners here. And all practitioners also try to be mindful not to offend other people unintentionally. Okay. You will. Third, unwholesome states is sloth and torpor, laziness, drowsiness, sleepiness. This laziness, drowsiness, sleepiness only arise for the first day, second day, third day. After that third day, usually no more, because your mind start to calm down, no more drowsiness, and you have plenty of time to sleep. You have 8 hours, 7 hours. After lunch also you sleep. So you have enough sleep. If you have enough sleep, usually sloth and torpor will not arise. But when it arises, how can you overcome it? First, be mindful of it first. If your mindfulness is sharp, precise, when, for example, when you concentrate on the breath, then you feel that the mind start become dull, then you must know that the change of the mind as soon as possible. Then notice that drowsiness state. Look at it directly. If you can look at it directly, usually it immediately become clear. If your mindfulness is keen and sharp and precise. But this only happen to those who have strong mindfulness. But if you don't have such a strong mindfulness, then when you feel drowsiness, only after some time you start to feel drowsiness. It's already a reason for some time, only you know. Then open your eyes. Open your eyes and meditate with open eyes. Or change the meditation subject for a while. Change to metta. This is the reason I teach metta first. Scan the body to make your mind active, because drowsiness is inactive mind. So scan the body, may the four elements in the body be well, healthy. Again and again, scan for 10 minutes, then go back to the breath again. Or you can recollect some saying of the Buddha. Some saying of the Buddha, or recollect how ancient monks they practice with strong effort. So you must try to recollect something that can inspire your mind and make your mind happy again and delight in your meditation subject. So when you are drowsy, don't let the drowsy overwhelm you. Try, raise your effort and counter-attack that drowsiness. Drowsiness is the greatest hindrance for the development of insight and concentration. And the fourth one is restless and remorse. Restlessness is also the greatest hindrances. And it happened to everyone. Drowsiness is easy to overcome, but restlessness is very difficult to overcome because only Arahant know restlessness. So we all have some restlessness. It's just that when it arises, you don't let it continue for so long. So when it arises in you, no. So if your mindfulness is sharp, the moment it arises, you must know. If you don't know, it means that your mindfulness is very blunt. Now only sometimes you know. It means that your mind is not clear at all. Why your mind is not clear? Because you do not develop concentration. Concentration also make your mind very sharp and clear. The moment there's thought, you know. When you know, knowing is mindfulness. So when there's knowing, restlessness immediately stops. Because restlessness is unwholesome. Mindfulness is wholesome. How can these two, wholesome and unwholesome, coexist together? Not possible. Therefore, when you know there's restlessness, usually it stops already. But it may come again. The restlessness come again, then you're mindful of it again. Mindful, it stops, then come back to the breath. Again and again. So you need persistent effort and strong mindfulness to know what is happening in your mind. Those who do not practice concentration for a long time, usually their mind cannot react so fast. Their mindfulness cannot be so fast. In order to have sustained mindfulness, you need concentration. Okay. So restlessness, and another way to overcome restlessness is to count the breath, breathing in, breathing out, one, breathing in, breathing out, two. Count up to five, then count again, until your mind becomes settled, then give up that counting. Once you're successful in your trying, then that means already useless. Abandon it, give it up. Okay. So this is the four. The last one is doubt. Doubt. Doubting. Doubting your practice. Doubting the breath. Can this breath lead to jhana? Can I attain jhana? Can I attain concentration? You doubt your ability. You doubt the practice. When you doubt your ability, when you doubt your practice, no progress. You will never progress. It become the greatest hindrance for you. So don't you just trust the Dharma. The only thing you can do is keep on practicing, trust the Dharma. The Dharma will unfold itself one day, don't know when. Maybe 10 days later, 5 days later, or 1 year, you don't know. So you just practice for the sake of practice, that's all. Just keep on going. Whether you hit the target, achieve the goal or not, no one can say. You are sure to achieve the goal, but we don't know when. Because this is non-self journey. Right? The spiritual journey is non-self. How I know whether I can hit it within 10 days, 20 days, or 5 days, we don't know. But if you always think that I must get it within 6 days, 7 days, then your mind is full of tension, full of expectation, that your mind cannot calm down. Your mind is not calm. Your mind cannot settle on the breath. So the best way is to forget your goal. Don't think about it. Your only duty is to meditate. Stay with the Dharma. The Dharma will return you gracefully. Gradually. That's what you can do. Okay? So put aside the doubt. So these are the five unwholesome state that you have to remove from your mind. And the sixth one, Buddha said, just now I mentioned the six things Buddha say, if a person does not abandon these six things, attainment of jhanas are not possible. So the first five are five hindrances. And the last one, Buddha say it again. If a person, the sixth one, if a person does not see as it actually is, the danger of sensual thought or sensual desire. You see, Buddha emphasized so much the danger of sensual desire. So if a person does not see the danger, the fault of sensual desire as it really is, it is impossible for him to attain first jhana. This sensual desire is already included in five hindrances, and yet Buddha emphasized again. Why? Precisely because first jhana, what's the meaning of first jhana? Quite secluded from sensual desire, secluded from unwholesome mental state. A bhikkhu, a monk, enter into first jhana with rupture and precious bond of seclusion. This seclusion is secluded from sensual pleasures. Only then first jhana is possible. Okay, so these are the first benefit. Then when you enter into jhana, there are a lot there's ruptures all over the body. Every part of the body is suffused with rupture and pleasures. At that time, your mind will not think of sensual pleasures. At that time, you will know how inferior sensual pleasure is. It's because you not yet attain higher happiness that your mind keep on thinking of sensual pleasures. Once you experience higher happiness than the sensual pleasures, then you will understand how inferior sensual pleasures is. So it's called about pleasant abiding here and now. And this pleasant abiding here and now is very important. Why I come to learn concentration? Before I come to learn concentration, I practice mindfulness. They call insight meditation, but I think it's mindfulness meditation. I practice very diligently. Very diligently, as I say, I not look up and down, I only cast down my eyes, and the more I practice, I lower down my head more and more until I hurt my neck. Because I don't want to see anyone. Okay. So after 6 years, and I practice very intensively, I slept only 4 hours a day for 3 years. Not 10 days, for 3 years. Then, after 6 years, I was completely exhausted. Because mindfulness meditation is very tiring. The moment I get up from the bed, 2 o'clock, 2 a.m., before I get up, I have to be mindful. I want to open my eye. So, start to open. You see, I can note mindful in such detail. I don't get up like prisoner, no. The moment, then I want to get up, I want to open my eye, then I know. So opening, seeing, looking, okay. So after 6 years, because the mind keep on noting, one object to another, it's after 6 years, I am completely exhausted. I don't know. There's no pleasant abiding. It's only suffering. Tiredness, emaciation. So I say, no, I want to rest. But I don't know where to rest. I don't know how to rest. Because we are instructed to be mindful every time, every moment. Every time, every moment. Then suddenly I say, no, I want to practice concentration. I have to practice concentration. If not, I cannot survive. Then, after that, the moment I think of I want to practice concentration, because concentration is not popular in Burma as well, not to speak in USA, it's not popular. Very few teachers teach concentration. So I also don't know where to find the teacher. The whole Burma, very difficult to get those qualified, competent teacher teaching concentration. So I moved to one, before I can find, then I moved to another monastery, but I determined I want to practice concentration. Then in that monastery, the moment I make aspiration, I want to practice concentration, a monk suddenly arrived in that monastery and starting to talk about concentration. I think the heavenly being also pity me. Want to show me a path to concentration. So the monk just suddenly appeared and talked about concentration. And okay, after listening to his talk, I decided to go. So I left that monastery and went to Pao Center to practice concentration for more than 10 years, stay in the forest. So when you have concentration, you have pleasant abiding. When you practice insight meditation, what you see is only impermanent, suffering, impermanent, suffering. You reach a state you don't want to see anymore. You don't want, I want to take a break. I want to rest. If you don't have jhana, if you don't have concentration, how are you going to rest? Rest means sleeping only. So the only way for you to rest is to rest in jhana. It's just like a soldier. A soldier going out to fight. Fighting. After some time, he gets tired. So he has no more energy to fight. So he has to retreat. Retreat to his own domain. He retreat to his own fort. F-O-R-T, fort. To charge his energy again. To recharge his energy again. Similarly, jhana is the same thing. When we practice insight meditation, we always fight with refinements. Always see impermanent suffering, always noting, seeing arising and passing away, seeing suffering. Then you need to take a break. So you retreat into jhana, then recharge, have a pleasant abiding, recharge yourself. After ready, go out and fight again. So it's called pleasant abiding here and now, the first benefit. But because for most layperson, you don't feel it. Why? Because your retreat is very short. After 10 days, you are like prisoner, released from the prison. But we are a monastic, you know? We have to contemplate all the time. So the mind gets very tired sometimes. We cannot go back to work. We cannot put our attention away from our meditation subject. You as a layperson, you just focus your attention on your job, finished. So, but we cannot. We keep on seeing impermanent, keep on seeing suffering. So we need a resting place. That's concentration, jhana concentration. Okay. Then the second benefit of concentration is to develop psychic power. The benefit of concentration is to develop psychic power. You may think, what's the use of psychic power? There are two psychic power which is very helpful, which are very helpful for your insight and for your conviction in the teaching of the Buddha. The first one is recollecting of one's past life. When you have good concentration, you can recollect your own past life. At a time, your doubt about the rebirth will go away. I know American, most American do not believe in rebirth. What you do not believe does not mean that it is not existing. What you do not believe does not mean that it's not there. It's just that our limited wisdom and concentration cannot see far. But this doesn't mean that rebirth does not exist. So keep your mind open. Huh? How much, unless you have developed your mind, your concentration to an extent, to a wide extent, only then you can see. Even then, your concentration, what you can see, cannot compare with what Buddha can see. Right? So if you can develop concentration and up to this recollecting of one's past life, then you will see your past life. One after another will keep on popping up in your mind. Endless. You cannot find the beginning of your past life. Where it starts, you cannot find. Then what's the benefit by seeing one's past life? When you see your past life, then you get very weary, tired about life and death. Because the past life, die again, reborn again, die again, reborn again, endlessly. Now still living, soon will die again, then rebirth again, die again, rebirth again. So you get very disgusted about the cycle of rebirth. This is the most important and very beneficial for a person to see one's past life. And also, when you see your past life, you understand another important point is cause and effect. You understand very well cause and effect. Why this life I meet with him? Why he become my best friend? Because of past life relationship. So why this life I suffer child abused? Oh, when I see my past life, oh, because in my past life I afflicted the same pain to others. Therefore, the effect rebounds. So when you see, if you do not see the suffering you encounter now, has its own causes in the past, then you will keep on blaming other people. You keep on blaming other people. Why I suffer? Why not others? Why me? When you keep on blaming other people, your anger will never end. Why you keep on blaming other people? Because you do not see in the past, we also cause other people suffering. Now you just reap what you sow. That's all. It's very fair. Right? Karma is very fair. It's called karma, cause and effect. Without seeing by yourself, you'll not believe. But if you develop concentration, you see by your own insight, then you can accept whatever misery you encounter in this present life. You also will understand why you meet with this teacher. Why you have faith to certain teacher, not other teacher. So everything happen in this life is an effect of, is a process of causal relationship. Nothing happen without cause. So you understand. When I teach meditation in Malaysia, one of the yogi who attended, after 5 days, she started to see her past life. After 5 days, she started to see her past life. Then one day she told me that she saw a woman. The moment she saw this woman, she felt a lot of pain in her chest. Chest is very painful. She doesn't understand why. Then she recollect her past life. Oh, then suddenly she realized, in her past, she sexual abuse. also a man sexual abuse this a lady. And this woman, after being sexually abused, she get very very angry, and she step him the knife in his chest. Therefore, in this present life, when now she became woman, he became woman. When she saw this lady, the past impression when she was being on the chest suddenly triggered her memory, and she feel the pain in the chest. It's cause and effect. So if you see that in the past you are the one who mistreat other people first, then how can you complain now, right? You cannot complain now. Not only you cannot complain now, then you feel sorry for this person. So you feel sorry for those who mistreat you because you treat them bad first. Just a cause and effect. Then you start to forgive. Extend your love for her. Forgive, asking forgiveness for her, for him, from her. So this is the benefit for seeing one's past. To understand everything happened due to cause and effect. Okay. And there are also other psychic power. I will continue tomorrow.